Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, from me, David Law, and alongside me, Catherine Whittaker, who has hot-footed it from the Amazon Prime Video studio, where we've been together watching Marin Cilic come from behind, come from match point down against Novak Djokovic, turning the tables from a year ago when it was he that was in charge against Feliciano Lopez and was just devastated after losing that. And he's won the title, Catherine. We're going to be hearing from Marin. I had a chance to speak to him for quite a while earlier on this evening. We're going to hear from Novak Djokovic. We'll hear from the doubles winners, Henri Contenon and John Peers, who beat Bruno Suarez and Jamie Murray. But as we sit here on the tournament director's balcony, overlooking 9,288 empty seats and a centre court that no longer has players on it, that has been some afternoon.
It does still have sun on it, though, the centre court, David. I mean, we're just basking. What an absolutely extraordinary week it's been. It's set the bar for weather at Queen's, hasn't it?
It really has.
The sun is still glinting off the dark blue. Are they dark blue or are they black seats?
They are black seats.
They are black.
With black lower ones and then grey upper tier.
Well,
just to be specific.
The glinting sun makes them look navy blue.
Yes.
And it just looks absolutely glorious. I usually hate this portion of an event because, as we've discussed on the podcast before, it feels like there's not enough sort of respect paid to the aftermath, and the trucks roll in all too quickly to start dismantling everything. But there is maybe it's happening behind the scenes that we can't see, but there is a wonderful stillness about the centre court just now. Nobody's dismantling anything before our eyes.
It's not quite French Open, is it, where they were graffitiing the press room? Because
the bulldozers were practically rolling in that night at the French Open. No, it is absolutely beautiful. The fever tree flags are swaying in the light breeze, and Marin Cilic is somewhere here. Is he still here, David?
I think he's just making his way out. He's got his wife with him, and they're heading off back to the hotel. But just before we hear from Marin and we talk about the final, just a quick word on the type of character that Marin Cilic is. I'm media director here, which means I have to involve myself in the trophy presentations, etc., and coordinate the photo shoot and so forth. And whilst Marin Cilic was going through his media duties, he finished them up about 10 minutes before the end of the doubles final. He knew that I wanted to speak to him for the Tennis Podcast, and he offered to wait until the end of the doubles ceremony in order to do our interview. I can't think of too many players who would do that.
Well, exactly as last year, Gigi and I couldn't think of any other players that would have offered to come and be a guest on the Tennis Podcast for, 10, 15 minutes it was last year?
We said, and he was devastated.
He couldn't get rid of it. He was absolutely devastated. It was a crushing loss this time last year. And he just came and sat down with us and had a lovely chat. And we, at the time, couldn't think of any other player that would have done that. And maybe there would have been other players that would have waited for the law today, David.
Well,
but not many, probably not many.
And I did threaten him.
Honestly, talking over the pictures in the Prime Video studio of him wandering around the centre court with the trophy and just eking every single split second of joy out of that moment. My cheeks were hurting from all the smiling. It was just completely infectious. There's something so warm about the sight of Marin Cilic smiling. It just makes me feel warm inside. And yeah, just I'm just so happy for him. So happy for him. Yeah. Particularly, of course, because of what happened in 2012, which, yes, he left here with a trophy, but it was always an asterisk next to his name, and I think in his own mind as well.
Yeah, if you need your memory jogging, I mean, we talk about that in our interview, you'll hear it shortly, but that was the one where David Nalbandian kicked the line judge up in the air, basically, and got himself disqualified. And as a result, Marin Cilic won the tournament, and it just felt like he was a footnote to all the coverage that followed. And for years, he's been trying since. I mean, this is a guy who reached the final the very next year, which I think shows how resilient he is, because he's had some blows. And you think of how he reached the final here last year. He had match point. He didn't take it. Then he went to Wimbledon, and his world fell apart in the final against Roger Federer, who was brilliant, but Cilic had blisters. He then lost a five-set epic in Australia. He just keeps on coming back for more, and I think that's hugely impressive. The match itself was fascinating. I mean, it was the longest final we've ever had here. 2 hours and 57 minutes it took, and there were some just great rallies. And I thought, I mean, it looked like Djokovic was going to get the job done, because he's got this 14-1 record against Cilic, and he just kept on making life difficult for him, but didn't put it away. Which was surprising.
I was worried for Cilic about how many great rallies there were, because although it was wonderful for a spectator, I thought for Cilic to win, the rallies need to be short and wham bam thank you ma'am, and you know, yeah, the shorter the better for Marin Cilic. So when I saw it sort of developing into a bit of a slugfest, I thought, well, this is Djokovic's. Obviously at match point down 4-1 in the tiebreak. And then the ball bouncing started, David.
The ball bouncing's always there.
I mean,
but both
never
sides.
Never has there been a bigger tell for two players on the same court as to a greater insight into how they're feeling. You don't need on-court coaching when Djokovic and Cilic are playing one another, do you? Just count the bounces and the leg wiggles in Cilic's case. But he, barring a couple of moments, kept it pretty much under wraps. You know, but, you know, at the baseline level. Whereas Djokovic, when he was 4-1 up in that tiebreak, suddenly it was, you know, it was 20 bounces.
Wow.
At one point. Suddenly, I mean, it was it was difficult for the director to deal with, because you didn't know. It felt like we could have run a VT while he was bouncing the ball.
And you also, when they're bouncing the ball, the other thing is there are the Fever Tree flags over the top of the stadium here in the different colours of their brand, and you just hear them just clinking against the mast of the flagpole there, and it's just increases the tension all the time, doesn't it? And it really was an occasion. It's no surprise it was 3 hours long, given all this ball bouncing. But what do you think happened to Djokovic? I mean, do you think this was Cilic wrestling it away from him? Was this Djokovic? Was it a choke? I mean, that was 4-1 in the tiebreak.
I think a combination of both. I think Cilic sensed the nerves of Djokovic. He sensed that it was there to be wrestled, but he had to play fearless tennis in order to do the wrestling. On match point, he went for it, didn't he? Went for it on the forehand. He didn't hold back. And at 4-1 down in the tiebreak, yes, there were a couple of loose points from Djokovic, but Cilic had to sense it was there for the wrestling, and Djokovic gave him a chink in the armour to sense, but Cilic still had to do a lot of wrestling, I think.
He sure did. He was mightily impressive. He ended up with a trophy. It was a sweet moment for him, and I got a chance to speak to him afterwards. Well, Marin, many congratulations.
Thank you.
After seeing you here a year ago and how sad you were, this is a great sight to see you smiling with that trophy next year.
Yeah, definitely. It was a similar scenario as last year, and probably that experience helped today, you know, just to keep the mental nerves up very high. And what a final. I mean, Novak was playing great tennis. He was really relentless and returned well, and even today was serving great. In that first set, I had a lot of break points, but most of the time he was coming up with some great serves and just putting pressure back at me. And I felt that I was not serving that well maybe, you know, the worst serving performance of the week, but still I managed to you know, hit off the ground really, really well. And I felt in that second set that if I'm going to be starting to serve a little bit better, it's going to give me more chances, then I'm going to put pressure back at him. And I was waiting for my chance, and maybe luckily from yesterday had those two tie breaks that I've played, and managed to play another one, great one today. And sort of in that third set, I felt that momentum shifted to my own side, and that I was playing really, really good tennis.
Is he part of the reason that you were struggling to serve at your best? Because, I mean, he really does return so well.
Yeah, I mean, when you see him on the other side, and especially knowing how well he moves, sort of, he just puts you in a difficult spot that you go a little bit extra on your serve. You're going to, you know, try to hit the line or try to hit a big serve, knowing that he might have a racket on it. And that was definitely not easy, putting you constantly under pressure. And the way he plays as well, especially throughout the week, and you know that through many years that we watched him, he's really consistent in his own game. He's not giving much, putting a lot of returns back, and you have to earn almost every single point.
There were some mental obstacles to overcome in that match in some ways, weren't there? Because your record against him is not great. You have got one win, but he's always been a difficult player for you. Yeah. Plus what happened a year ago when you were so close and you missed out.
Yeah, absolutely. I think mentally I did extremely well during all week, especially knowing that I had one of the toughest draws around from the first round until the final, and also knowing that I played Novak, who is also very motivated to come back and showing already again great tennis, and again today he was serving really good, not giving me too many chances, and then being set down, you know, it was a lot at me, but I felt that with all of that pressure I delivered really well, and gives me amazing confidence for coming up weeks, and hopefully I can keep it up.
You mentioned you felt that if your serving could start to come together that you still had a chance. Mm-hmm. I mean, you were a match point down, so what goes through your mind when you are match point down?
You know, even in that situation, when I was match point down, I felt in, you know, prior to that game, I was starting to get better rhythm on my serve, and I started to feel that everything is coming into the rhythm. And even that game, being set match point down, I felt that I might deliver a good serve, or I'm going to have a good shot after my serve. Obviously, you never know what's going to come at you, but I felt somehow quite, in a way, relaxed, but, you know, knowing that I'm going to be able to deliver, and keeping on with my own game plan, with my routine. And, you know, it's paid out. And obviously, sometimes you might be playing great tennis and it doesn't turn out. So I felt that, you know, still throughout the match, I was playing great tennis, and I just kept going with that pressure.
I mentioned that record. I won't mention it too much, because it's not the greatest reading. But the thing is, Novak has returned to some form this week. He's got to a final. Yeah. But does he feel different as an opponent now to what he did maybe 3 years ago?
You know, just looking from the other side of the net, you know, I feel that maybe in some shots he was maybe executing them a little bit more better. You know, you could see even today I didn't have such a great percentage of the first serve, and you know, he was just giving me some chances to stay with him, because I had a lot of second serves and some of them he was missing, and that's what maybe usually we wouldn't see from him. From the other parts of the court, it's difficult to judge for me. Maybe, you know, from the serving standpoint, I don't know if he had a slightly faster serve in the past. You know, that might be just the process for him while he's on this process to be completely healthy. But, you know, I feel that he's movement-wise, moving really well, returning well. And I think he's, you know, improving every single week, and great for us to see him playing so well, and hope that he's going to stay healthy.
But do you think maybe yourself as a player, and players that play against him, because he's not been as successful in the last year, do you feel different? I mean, is there more belief in your game these days against him?
I think, you know, as we all know, tennis is such a sport where, you know, couple percents make a huge difference. He had a match point. I mean, he could have been the one that lifts the trophy today, and it's just a matter of a mental approach. And you know, some things might be different from the time when he was at the top, and it's just slight edge. And you know, looking at my own side, I feel that I improved as a player as well in these last 2 years since we played last time together. I think that I was playing great tennis, and I was the one trying to have the offense most of the time. And you know, just I feel that with my own game, I raised also to another level.
So you have lifted this trophy for a second time,
yeah,
and in a slightly different situation to last time.
Yeah.
Does it feel better?
Absolutely, absolutely, it feels better. You know, that 2012 final, it was very unfortunate. You know, but still, it was you know, just part of the sport as well, that sometimes out of so many matches something maybe like that could happen. But it was very unfortunate to have it in the final, and it was just a little bit bitter to have the trophy that way. But you know, I played throughout the years such a great tennis here in Queens. I feel almost like home, and always delivered great tennis, especially at the center court. So it's a pleasure to have the trophy again.
And next stop, Wimbledon, where you also have a little bit of unfinished business there, it feels, because you played so well last time, and you had the misfortune in the final with the blisters.
Yeah, it was definitely misfortune, and it was a tough time of the year for me just to come to the final, do so much, do so well, and be in such a great form, and then not be able to play at 100%. And you know, as mentioned, even when you are not a few percent at the top, you know, you feel it on the court, and especially playing against Roger, I had no chance to win it. So it's going to be great again to play there, but I don't feel that it might be a revenge for me to come back to Wimbledon. I felt that still I had an amazing year last year. I played great tennis. Definitely was unfortunate, but still having happy memories and going again there with a great form.
Do you ever imagine yourself with that trophy at Wimbledon?
Not yet.
You're going to wait.
Yeah, I have a plate, you know. I got the plate, so I imagine myself with a plate and saw myself with a plate. But, you know, hopefully one day, trophy, I could lift it.
Well, you've lifted this one, and it's the biggest trophy in tennis, pretty much. And we love having you here, so thank you for everything this week, and very many congratulations.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, and hope to see you soon, and next year, of course.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. So Marin Cilic, just a thoroughly lovely bloke, and he's got the big old trophy here at the Queen's Club Fever-Tree Championships, champion of 2018. So Wimbledon, what do you think?
Well, I can tell you what Daniela Hantikova thinks, and she said it very emphatically live on air on Amazon. She said she sees Marin Cilic as the favourite, and she actually said
before
the final. Yeah, wow. She's been very punchy about Marin Cilic.
She picked him for the title.
The theme of the week in the Amazon Prime studio has been disagreement between her and Greg. It's
what?
Been an absolute joy.
Disagreement with you around?
Yeah.
Surely not.
Greg went for Djokovic in three, and Daniela went for Cilic in three, and boy did she pick that right. And she wasn't even that worried, you know, when he was match point. She sort of, I don't know, she sensed this belief in Cilic that we've all doubted in him over the years. And she's a very astute analyst of the game, Daniela. She knows Marin Vida very, very well. Incidentally, she almost worked with him.
Oh, really?
Novak Djokovic was Marin Vida's second choice at one point. So yeah, she sees him as the favourite for Wimbledon. Greg disagrees, sees him as the second favourite after Federer, who incidentally lost the final in Halle today to Borna Coric. I don't know how much to read into that. I didn't see the match.
Interesting, though, isn't it?
But Coric has no grass court pedigree at all.
He beat Zverev in the first round as well. I mean, what a week for Croatia on the tennis circuit.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, and in football.
Yeah.
It's a good time to be sort of a little bit Croatian, David.
It's brilliant. So yeah, I'm loving it. I'm going to get my red and white check shirt out when I get home. Just on that point, first of all, I know Daniela only a little bit, having commentated for one set with her last year. Is she a bit like me and rubs it in when she gets a prediction right?
Do you mean a bit like you or a bit like Greg?
Well, both.
Bless Greg, but he does let you know about it when he gets one right. And he gets them right plenty often, but he makes sure you remember that.
So what was
what
her celebration?
She was cool and calm. If I hadn't mentioned it, she wouldn't have mentioned it herself.
Oh, really?
She's a cool cookie, Daniela Hantikova. I've got so much time for her, and as I say, a brilliant analyst
of
the game.
I was watching a lot throughout the week, and I was mightily impressed. I mean, I think I did tell you, again, you know, I'm going to rub this in about something I got right. I did say I thought she'd be quite good,
didn't
I?
You did.
But I didn't think she'd be that good. You know, first week she's done it on TV in quite this sort of role, and my goodness, she was excellent.
Yeah, so, and I now find myself, you know, had I not heard her say that, I still... I hope he's not here listening, but I still probably wouldn't be thinking of Cilic in terms of being the favourite for Wimbledon. But since she said that, I've started thinking, well, I mean, it seems bizarre to put him ahead of Federer, and I'm still not quite there, but I'm thinking about it a bit more seriously than I would have done had I not heard her say that. I'm certainly taking that view very seriously under advisement.
So, Novak Djokovic, what about him? He came into the press room afterwards and... I mean, what did he make of the final and those missed opportunities?
Well, he was keen to point out how close he got. You know, he was match point away, and that there were obviously positives to take from that. But I think a little bit at a loss. To explain exactly what happened, a bit like after Chekhinar. So I mean, he certainly wasn't as furious and rash and hot-headed as he was after the Chekhinato loss in Paris. He gave more considered answers, you know. Didn't do anything hugely dramatic, but still, in terms of what he said, at a bit of a loss to explain why it's not quite happening, because it all seemed to be there in place. He back-referenced the Dimitrov victory and how significant that felt to him, as well as to us watching on, and, you know, why he couldn't be the guy that beat Dimitrov today in the big moments, I guess, is hard for him to explain, because he's always been able to be that guy. He's always been more so that guy in the big moments before, and now it's letting him down when it matters most.
It is something that still I find quite hard to reconcile with this Novak Djokovic, that does seem, when it gets tight, that might be the moment that we see this vulnerability, and you never used to doubt that in the past. So Novak Djokovic, not happy with the way the final went.
It wasn't to be, unfortunately. 4-1 up in the tiebreak, second, double 4-4, 4-3 up. I got a little bit tight there, and he used it. He served well when he needed to, and congratulations to him. But I can definitely take a lot of positives out of this week. I feel like, you know, beating Dimitrov was one of the top players in straight sets, a couple of good all straight sets. You know, I had a couple of match points to end it up in straight sets against Cilic, but just match turned around. He had a great comeback. Third set, again, he was very close. All in all, I think the level of my tennis has been as good as it has been in the last 12 months.
So, Novak Djokovic, as you say, had a loss about today, but I still, looking at it as a sort of glasses half full kind of way, I would say, you know, this is a big deal that he's got to the final here. He said, I've not been here 8 years and I'm going to be here every year afterwards now because I've loved it, which is really nice to hear. He does seem happy to be at least back now and playing well most of the time. I just think it's a building process. That's what I would imagine it will end up being, that like Nadal, he's putting these building blocks in place and eventually he'll get there, but he might have to take a few bloody noses first.
Yeah, I would feel the same. However, hearing him say emphatically that I'm not a contender, I don't see myself as a contender for Wimbledon, I find that interesting.
That's what you do though, isn't it? You know, you sort of take the pressure off yourself a bit?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, well, exactly. I can only assume it's a mind game because he's still a 3-time champion, a 12-time Grand Slam champion. It's not like there's a huge wealth of players that we're talking about as genuine contenders to Federer at this year's Wimbledon. I mean, okay, you can't discount Nadal, but the fact is he doesn't generally win Grand Slams without matches in warm-up events. He needs the matches, doesn't he? So for me, the fact that he hasn't played a warm-up event suggests that he is... I mean, he will be as competitive as he always is, Nadal, at Wimbledon. He only has one setting, but he's... I think if Wimbledon were all he wanted, another Wimbledon title, he would have been here at Queen's this year somehow or some way, I believe. So for me, that puts a little asterisk next to Nadal's name. Cilic is absolutely in there. Beyond that, though, and obviously Federer, surely you have to look to Djokovic.
It's good, isn't it? There's so much intrigue.
It's brilliant, but he has to be a contender. Say something Stakovsky-esque happens to Federer early on. I mean, suddenly Djokovic is absolutely in the conversation, isn't he? I mean, you know, things can... It wouldn't take that extraordinary a sequence of events for Djokovic suddenly to become the favourite.
He looks comfortable on the surface again, which he hasn't the last couple of years. The physical discomfort has gone, which is pleasing. And, not today, though, because Marin Cilic had too much for him and he is the singles champion. So the doubles, Henri Kontinen and John Peers were the champions. Bit of a surprise, I thought, how one-sided it was, because they beat Jamie Murray and Bruno Suarez 6-4, 6-2. Really wasn't competitive at all. And credit to Kontinen and Peers. I mean, that's a good win. It's also nice for Peers that he's put behind him the disappointment of about 4 years ago when he lost in the final when his partner was Jamie Murray. They lost in the deciding champions tiebreak on that occasion. But they get the title and they go into Wimbledon with the Fevertree Championships doubles trophy.
And I spoke to them afterwards and I tell you what, they seem to... Yeah, they think they're winning Wimbledon, or certainly,
really?
You know, giving a good fist of it. Yeah, they talked up a really good game about... I said... So, do you think you can win Wimbledon now? And they sort of looked at me as if it was almost a rude question. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, why wouldn't we?
Yeah, quite right. Very interesting. We also had the first ever wheelchair exhibition tournament at the Fevertree Championships this year. It was won by Stefan Olsen against Stefan Oudet of France. And
all the Stefans.
Yeah, Catherine looking at me and I'm just... trying to work out whether I've got my pronunciations wrong.
Stefan
there.
Stefan Oudet.
Yeah. So I got it right.
I'm
then.
Less good on the Swedish front, but Olsen sounds safe.
It does, doesn't it? So the week's been pretty good.
Oh, I'll say, yeah.
I've loved it. It's been awesome. The weather at this place. I mean, this is my 23rd year. We've not had weather like this before.
No, not consistently. We've had days and little runs here and there, but you're always sort of edgy that it'll all come to a crushing end and the clouds will roll in and it'll start raining. But there's been no edginess. It's just sort of felt like it shall be ever thus.
Indeed.
The sun will always be shining over the Queen's Club.
Oh, that's the new Britain.
Until 2019.
Right. So you're off
and
to
England
Eastbourne.
England won at football.
England won at football. Croatia won at football. I'm having a great day. So Catherine's off to Eastbourne. There's no stopping
just
this woman.
Just can't get enough of tennis.
No, she's going to go and do that event. And then she's got Wimbledon, working for the BBC, television and radio, and I'll be there too. We'll be doing daily podcasts at Wimbledon. Can't wait for that. And also, Catherine, just a small matter of a first-round draw in Eastbourne between Andy Murray and Stan Wawrinka. And I saw Stan 2 minutes after that draw came through, and he had a face like thunder.
Did he? It's not ideal for anyone, is it? Apart from the tournament.
Winner to play Kyle Edmund.
The two biggest names by far. I mean, yeah, they've got other good names. They've got Kyle, they've got Denis Shapovalov, they've got Diego Schwartzman as their top seed, who's never won a match on grass.
Mm.
And is fresh from a trip to Moscow.
Is he?
A very unsuccessful trip to Moscow to watch Argentina lose to Croatia.
Oh, dear.
Yeah,
that didn't go very well then.
But yeah, they've got Murray and Wawrinka in the first round. It's a shocker for them, but it's an absolute delight for us. Not before 4 p.m. exclusively on Prime Video, David.
Yes, it is. I'm going to be watching that. That's going to be awesome. So Catherine's off to Eastbourne. I'm off to kind of lie in the dark room, quite honestly. This has been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and our executive producers, Melanie Bowes, SSSTennisBalls.com, our sponsors, La Manga Club, and of course, Charlie the Ferret. It's been a lot of fun, Catherine. I've enjoyed this week, full of podcast joy, and we will be back with more of them in a week's time and daily at Wimbledon. Thanks ever so much for listening. We'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.